Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Tightmates Fitness Podcast. Today, we actually have a fellow podcaster on the show. This guy's doing some great things. Definitely someone that Kyle and I look up to or inspire to. He's done some crazy stuff, from running 100 kilometers in the Simpsons Desert, crazy stuff, and then to raising funds for his non-for-profit charity, Tuco. So today we welcome Zach, or better known as Talking With Zach, to the podcast.
Thanks, boys. Thanks for having me.
No worries. I sort of stitched you up, didn't I? Sent him to the wrong location.
Yeah, about 3 blocks away, and then I brought some snacks for the boys. And the bottle went through the new Coles fucking paper bags. So and then off to a great start.
And then it sprayed all over the white jumper.
Yeah. Nah, it's been good. It's been good. Thanks for having me, boys.
No worries at all. So just getting started, we'd like to know a bit more about yourself. So who are you and what's your purpose in life?
My purpose, wow. My name is Zach Pettit. I'm 27 years old. I'm 28 next month. Don't jump the gun. It sounds like when you're in primary school, you're like, I'm 6, turning 27. But 27. I was brought up in a town called Whittlesea, northern suburbs.
Near where King the bushfires were.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So I was there for first 14 years of my life. And then I went to Assumption College Kilmore, which was out in Kilmore.
Is obviously that northern suburbs?
Melbourne. Northern suburbs, even more. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, up north. I graduated school there, did year 12, played footy and basketball for obviously Whittlesea Football Club as well as Assumption. So that's a little bit about myself, I guess. Then I got into running during lockdown, like most people, I think. It either was drinking red wine and cooking food on a regular basis every night, or it was get out there and go for a run.
Yeah, so, I love that. Sounds quite similar to what we've done as well with our journey and getting into running, like sort of transition from playing sport like football into running. So are you similar, like you transitioned from footy, or had you already stopped prior to?
Prior to COVID.
Yeah.
I played footy and I did my first ever long run when I was, it was actually in 2019 before COVID had started, and I did both and then realized pretty quickly that my body couldn't handle both.
Yeah.
Because I played footy on the Saturday and then I ran 32Ks on the Sunday.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. And kind of realized quick smart that I had to give one up. So going into COVID, I kind of forgot about running. I actually had to get an operation on my shoulder.
Yeah.
And it just put a lot into perspective for myself. Gave me a lot of time to think and just work out what I wanted and how I could achieve it. And I realized that like running was ultimately the escape that I needed to kind of deal with my thoughts and emotions.
And so, I think that's probably one of the best things about running is when you go out there, you start running, like your thoughts get lost, and like, well, you're thinking about different things and it's kind of like somewhat meditative,
right? Yeah, exactly right. That's probably the biggest thing that I learned was at the first year, I didn't even realize what I was doing. I guess you kind of a bit naive or oblivious to what you're doing, but the more I did it, the more I got familiar with myself and started to enjoy my own company. Yeah. And then decided to run a full marathon.
So that was back in 2019, first marathon?
2020 was my first marathon. The first big run I ever did, which was 32 kilometres, which was from Whittlesea to Kilmore, was in 2019, yeah.
Yeah. And what about Tuco? So we're talking, me and Brando, like, where's that initiated from? It's a not-for-profit company?
Yeah, correct.
So how did that initiate?
So Tuco has been official for not even 2 years yet, but it was founded by myself in 2021,
yep.
Peak COVID. So we can take a few steps back. So basically, my best friend Zane Robert Collier was diagnosed with cancer, osteosarcoma. So the name Tuco is It's Time to Know Osteosarcoma.
Yep.
So he was diagnosed in year 12 with osteosarcoma, which was a big shock to everyone because he's very fit, he was very healthy, and it was at the very start of the year, I think he found out, I'm going to say April.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a bit of a niggle in his left femur.
Yeah.
And it stopped him from being able to train and play footy. So we'd all be, you know, preparing for the biggest season of our lives because, you know, you finally get to play first footy. And he'd already been playing for a few years prior, but had the opportunity to go into a senior role position. And he couldn't get out on the track. So, yeah, he went and got looked up. And it came back that he needed a biopsy. So they did that. And when they did the biopsy, basically they pulled out a small chunk of his bone. And yeah, they found out that it was osteosarcoma. So yeah, all in the space of a couple of weeks, he went from, you know, being at school a normal kid. He'd only just turned 18. I think he turned 18 like a month prior to finding out that he had osteosarcoma, to yeah, his whole life being flipped upside down. Mm. So yeah, it was a lot to comprehend and take in. I think I was diagnosed with anxiety and depression for the first time in year 12, and I honestly had no idea what the fuck that was.
Mm.
And it speaks volumes about how schools operate, I feel like.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so in year 12, yeah, he was diagnosed with that. He had his femur removed completely and had a metal rod put attached to his hip and his knee.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I was pretty full on to watch him go through that. That's such a brutal surgery. Mm. So, yeah, he went through that, had that removed. And then he had to learn how to obviously walk again. But it also blew up, got infected. Yep. So when it blew up, yeah, he had a really big leg and had to get it drained and, you know, operated. He got on again. So, yeah, it was very heavy, a lot to take in. In year 12 year as well. We actually won the grand final that year. So
did you?
Yeah. We beat Ivanhoe. Zane was unable to play. I didn't play either. I wasn't that good. He's good at twos footy, wasn't good at senior level.
Oh, so that seniors, they won the flag.
Yeah, seniors did, yeah. So yeah, it was nice to be by his side for that game. We all shaved our heads for him as well, so that was pretty special. And then we graduated. I remember pretty specifically, like, being at grad and I was pretty pissy, and he was just he was just in his wheelchair, and like, we were side by side, and he's like, look, Zach, like, I've got to go take my injections, and I'll just wheel him into the disabled toilets and watch him do whatever he needed to do. And just thought, like, what the fuck is going on? Like, mm-hmm. it's pretty full on. Part of me thought that, like, it was a normal way of life. Like, I thought that everyone else would experience this with a friend at that stage and at that time. And it's probably not something I've really ever spoken about, but I just kind of normalized it in my own head. I don't know if it was a coping mechanism or not, but yeah, that's what I did. So then, yeah, I remember that memory quite specifically. But then, yeah, graduating school, and then, you know, you got to find work. All the rest of it, I laboured for a bit, but I also broke my wrist. I broke my scaphoid, which is the worst bone in your body you can break.
How'd you do that?
Playing footy. Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. Typical. So, I was out, and I remember grinding. I had plaster on for over a year, it was like 18 months, I think, and I operated on, and I remember really wanting to play under-19s footy because we were doing really well at Whittlesea, going to win the grand final. And I was playing really good footy at that age, and I didn't want to miss out on another grand final, so I was grinding the plaster off and playing, and Zane would come and watch, and I remember one time he watched. We actually had my brother's deb the night before, and he made sure that I got pissed with him. But I remember smothering the footy. It was at Dymo, and it hurt me a lot, and I played a really good game. And I remember after it, him sitting down and just saying to me, like, you know, listen to your body and don't fuck around with it. Like, do whatever's needed to get it sorted. Don't go out and play footy just because you don't want to miss out on something. So after that conversation, I just told everyone that that was it. I'm not playing till I'm right, and I want to be by Zane's side. So then it got to later in that year, and his osteosarcoma actually spread from his leg to his vital organs, which was his lungs. Mm-hmm. When it spreads, I can't give you the exact percentage of chance for survival rate, but it's not good. It's not great. And like I said, still oblivious to the matter. Mm-hmm. Still, it's still a shock just even talking about it now. But he had it spread, and then he had it operated on quite a few times actually, and a lot of chemotherapy and radiation. And then I think we got the news in July, I'm going to say, maybe June. Yeah, I'll say June. June of 2015, that he didn't have much longer left to live. I think finding...
Was that 14 months?
At 14 months as in at
the stage. Like when from it started. When he was diagnosed to...
Correct, May, passed. June. Yeah, yeah, it would be. Yeah. Ish, yeah. Yeah, so when you get told that your best friend's not going to live and then he have to tell you that, it's it's a very bitter pill to swallow. So there was a lot to take in and process.
How do you absorb it?
You black out. To say it, yeah, that's all I can remember is blacking out and not really knowing how to approach the situation. Especially at that age, I was 20, so, and he was 19. So I'm pretty certain I went and bought a deck of ciggies. Yeah, I definitely did.
a lot to deal with, like, that young of age. Do you think with time you've sort of process it a lot better?
Yeah, well, yeah, we can get into that for sure. So I think just leading to that, and then him passing away in August. So my birthday is coming up. I spent the 14th with him, and then the 15th is my birthday. I spent the whole day with him the 14th, 15th, and then he passed away the 24th.
Mm.
So the last day I've ever seen him was on my birthday, which is bizarre. But it's weird to look back on now and talk about it for sure. Mm. It's always something that feels like a dream almost, or a nightmare. But I think, yeah, you're right in asking that question, Brandon. Yeah, I think COVID allowed me to realize just how much I was numbing the pain. I love my partying, to be honest. I love having a good time, but it kind of fell into all the time. So I kind of, had this time to reevaluate my life and just put it all into perspective. And then I decided, fuck it, I'm going to do something about it.
Mm.
And that's why I'm here today.
Yeah, well, essentially the way we got to know you was through Harish, who is our best mate, who obviously was diagnosed with osteosarcoma.
Yeah. It's a big word.
And so Harish, his diagnosis was in his humerus.
Yeah.
So right? It was right.
Yeah, right. His right shoulder. Right side, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that was something that was like pretty concerning for us as well. Like,
massive shock, yeah.
Statistic that, you know, there's going to be a person that you know that has cancer.
Mm.
And you never really think to be like your close mate.
Mm.
And when it happens, it's definitely a shock to the system. And you somewhat like don't know how to observe it. Like it can be a struggle because you just want to be there and comfort them. But I know for Harish, like he had a really positive mentality the whole way. But yeah, it's something that's plays on your mind a lot. Like even for me, like with Harish, it's like, fuck, what would happen if he didn't like get through? So it's something that always plays on your mind. And fortunately for Harish, he went through all the chemo and radiation as well, which is quite extensive, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, he had a massive operation done. And that's the thing with osteosarcoma. It's so unknown and vicious that, surgeons flock to get to come up with different ideas of how to combat it. So it's, you can't pinpoint like different types of cancers and their severity. They're all bad, but yeah, osteosarcoma is fucking brutal.
It's rare too, isn't it?
It's rare, but it's not rare in a sense of common, like how common it is.
Because it's a bone cancer.
Yeah, right. It is quite common, but I think it's rareness. Is that a word?
Yeah.
Rareness would be more so what it does if it spreads. And metastasize is a word that, if we leave this today and you know that word, that's a good thing. I've taught someone something today. But yeah, it spreads. And when it spreads, they don't know how or why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of talk behind how it starts, why it starts. But that's another thing, like why. Mm. So yeah, I guess that's what I questioned so often and almost, pushed it away. That, you know how you just almost couldn't pronounce osteosarcoma? I got to a point where I buried it that deeply through a coping strategy that's actually what caused Tuco to start, because I forgot the name, which then I felt guilty for.
Mm-hmm.
So then when I remembered the name, or actually got told the name, I made a promise to myself that I'd never forget it again. And then through that promise started a fundraiser, and then through the fundraiser created a non-for-profit. So
it's awesome. Yeah. So yeah. What was the initial fundraiser?
The initial fundraiser was quite excessive, but it did happen. So I had a chat with my dad after I ran that 32-kilometer run and said, you know what, I think I can double that. And it was a stupid COVID garage shed conversation, and it turned into thinking I could double it to how about I run 4 ultra marathons in 4 weekends. So it was pretty ridiculous thinking, but it's something that I've always done. Just go to the most extremes, and
as we've seen.
Yeah, and that's just how my nature is, and I don't think I can, I can chew anything that I want and then keep going, spit it out. But I ran, my first race was South Morang, which is close to Whittlesea, to Brighton, which was 42. So my first run was a marathon. So it was every Sunday in May in 2021.
Yeah.
I trained for about 3-4 months pretty consistently. And I never ran an ultra marathon. I'd only ever ran one marathon at this point. So I ran that. And then the following weekend, I ran 48 kilometres around Assumption Kilmore's footy oval. Just straight.
Wait, just laps.
Oval. What? How many laps was it?
Don't know. Everyone asks, but I didn't want to know. Yeah. And I didn't even look at how far. Yeah, that's probably still the most brutal run I've ever done in my life, because it's mentally straining, because you constantly run around the same circle again and again. And I knew that was going to do exactly what it did to me and, fuck me up mentally. We've all listened to David Goggins and a few other blokes, so I got that idea from them.
So you definitely reached some darkness
through that run? Yeah, I can say I've definitely reached some darkness lately. But I did that. I ticked that off.
Was that by yourself as well?
It was with a group, but I was the only one that ran that amount of distance, yeah. But I had a great support crew there. Every weekend, someone was down. Which was beautiful to see all these different friends and family members come to different, or all of them. So, and it was a special time because we had only just come out. I don't know how it worked, but we came out of lockdown and I did these runs, and then we went back into lockdown once it was finished. But yeah, I did that. And then the third race, kind of said to myself, all right, if I can do that, I can run an ultra marathon. So the third one was an ultra, and it was actually my first ever event. It was the Great Ocean Road Run.
Oh, yeah.
The 60.
Nice.
Yeah. So I did that, and that was the most, probably one of the most beautiful experiences of my life. I think, like, I was by myself. No one was there even to support. You know, I started the race off by myself, said goodbye to a couple of friends that came and quickly said hello, and then, yeah, jetted off, and then I don't know how long it took us, 6.5 hours or something.
Was that a bit of trail running too?
Yeah, it is. A bit of trail. That was my first ever time running a little bit of trail. Mm. I think 18 kilometres of it is trail, just all uphill too.
Mad elevation.
Yeah, it is a massive, massive elevation. Ticked that off the list. That was a beautiful weekend. That's
a massive achievement.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was. That was where I kind of defined myself as an ultra runner, but still didn't really accept it. Yeah. Still was trying to process it all, I guess. And then the last run was specifically for Zane. Zane played his junior footy at Essendon Duda Stars.
Yeah.
So I ran from Duda Stars to Assumption, where he finished, played his last ever game. So that was a total of 64 kilometres. And it was, I think, like 1400 elevation. So I did that.
That's a tough run.
How many kilometres was it all up over the 4 weeks?
64 plus 60. Mm. What's that? I'm shocked with maths.
124.
Yeah. Plus 48. 120.
No,
160. 72. Yeah, so 214-ish. Yeah. And I wouldn't run during the week either. Just allow the body to recover.
Yeah, recover.
Yeah, so... And then, I completed that, and we had over 200 people at Assumption on the day. And then we went to Kilmore Footy Club and... Kilmore Pub and tore it a new one.
That is absolutely crazy. And a massive achievement.
How did your body respond to those 4 consecutive weeks?
There was always different niggles during the week, like building up. And like my body would kind of just get over it as the next race would come up. So it was interesting to see the body repair. I remember the third run where I ran that Great Ocean Road Run, thinking to myself, because I had really bad plantar fasciitis. Yeah. So a lot of my mates getting into running now, and they're like, Zach, you've got this foot. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, have fun.
Put a ball into it, you'll deal with it. Yeah. And I remember going, I wonder how this race would feel being on fresh feet. So I kind of knew where I was at, and I did really, really well. Like I ran my quickest ever marathon that day, and I ran it in 6 hours and 4 minutes or something. So it was a good time. Overall my body felt pretty good. I think after it all, everything's in ultra running is a mental battle. Mm-hmm. But after it all, I kind of realized a lot in terms of my mental fitness. Like I got depressed really quickly, super depressed. So
after it?
Yeah. Straight after.
Do you think because of like the massive achievement you just accomplished, or?
Yeah, well.
Not having anything sort of planned straight after it, like. With myself, I find that whenever I sort of achieve something, I've got to have something like coming up as well. Otherwise, just to keep myself
calm down.
It's an ultra mindset. I think I can get deep and talk about it, but I've really broken it down probably the last 6 months, and probably even spoken a little bit about it on my podcast. But I was doing these things partly. So it was 50-50 split. So it was 50% for Tuco, raising funds, awareness, and obviously allowing Zane's legacy to live on forever.
Mm.
But the other 50% and the bad 50% was validation, acceptance, and love. So growing up, I did these things, and you know, I felt loved and accepted by my own parents, I guess, through doing great things, whether it was from winning a best and fairest trophy at fucking basketball or footy or, you know, doing these things. So getting the I'm proud of you, Zach, from my family and then from all my friends. And then, like, the big ego that came behind, like, oh, good on you for doing this. I was going to say my alarm's going to go off. So does someone want to turn that off?
Yeah, for that, yeah.
Actually, do you want to give me my phone as well? Just so it doesn't...
email and sign.
Don't even... Every podcast I've ever done in my life, my alarm goes off. I've got a bad memory.
What's the alarm for?
Oh, it won't even be like, I would have already done it. I just haven't turned it off.
To do something.
Yeah, just to do something. I'm shocking. Every podcast, if you ever listen to it, my alarm will go off. But,
it's all right. Kyle will cut that part out.
No, keep it in. Keep it in. That's it. But, yeah, where was I? So I think it gave me a really big head for a lot of the wrong reasons. So I've adjusted to that since. But yeah, so it was Tuco was just kicking off, you know, and getting all the validation and acceptance from friends and family and the respect and people listening to you. It created a really big sense of ego. Mm. And since then, I can tell you that I don't run for those reasons anymore.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of sitting with myself and even talking to a psych and just pulling it all apart to really dive deep into that realm and go, okay, I didn't know about that because I was just doing it and loving it. So now I do this for this. And if someone taps me on the back on the way, I'll appreciate it and I'll accept the compliment, but I won't go any further and allow it to build my ego up. So since coming home from the desert, it's been a really different,
the fact that you're conscious of that's quite incredible. It shows that you're willing to sit with your thoughts and actually explain what the process is. Because I feel like there's many people, like even myself, for things that I'm doing at the moment, maybe I'm not doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
And it's until you sit back and actually clarify with what's happening is quite incredible. So what does it look like now with your running?
Well, in a sense of the running aspect, nothing's changed, and the sense of inspiring others, like you guys said in the intro, and I really appreciate that, and something that I still have to really come to terms with. I'm all for it, and I love to inspire others, and I love to be open and honest and raw, because that's why I have a podcast as well. But if someone is, you know, proud of me or really wants to boost my self-esteem, I'll take it on, but I won't allow it to boost my self-esteem, if that makes sense.
Or like to boost your ego.
Ego, sorry. Yeah. So it won't boost my ego anymore. The things that I do on a daily basis that makes me feel like a good person, no one will ever know about, because I've kind of realized that's what makes a good person. It's not talking about it. So I really do see Tuco as a job now, and if it's me raising money and funds and doing it through inspiring others and allowing other people to talk, like the desert, where people will say to me, oh fuck, I can't believe you ran in the desert, I was telling blah 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 this. What they don't understand is they're actually telling people, I know what osteosarcoma is, this is what it is.
Yeah.
And it's just through me turning someone's head because I went and ran in a desert, when in reality, what they're actually saying is, I know what osteosarcoma is. So I kind of really broke it down and identified that actually, no, that's what they're saying, and I'm glad that they're saying that, because that's why I'm doing it.
And you're starting to like really raise the awareness of it, which... At the end of the day, that's what you're intrinsically motivated to do.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, it's spot on. That is exactly what I'm doing. And my ego gets boosted in other ways, so I can always cut that in half and adjust it. So, yeah.
Yeah. And obviously you did, so the ultra marathon at Simpson Desert.
Yeah.
So what was about a month ago now?
Yeah, just over a month ago, yeah.
So we were trying to get you on before it.
Yeah.
I'm actually sort of glad that we got you on after it, because we can sort of break that down.
I'm glad you got me on after it. It's probably better that way.
Yeah.
I've always sort of thought in my mind, how do you train for an ultra? And especially one that's in the desert. That's, I guess, whereabouts were you? Because Simpson's Desert's what, like... crosses spans over like a few states. So, yeah.
So I was in Birdsville, which is like
South Australia.
Yeah, no, it's on the. I was actually running on the border of South Australia at one point, which is pretty cool. I could see the fence line. Oh. Well, it's not. There's not actually a fence line, but. What we were running on was a fence line. They said on the other side of that is South Australia.
Yeah.
So maybe they've got a fence line right through South Australia. No one wants to go in there. But I was in Queensland technically,
Yeah.
On the bottom. So, I did it a month ago, yeah.
And how'd you get there? How did you train for it? Did you have a coach running you through how to get there, or was it something that you've sort of learnt from your journey?
I guess I did have a coach initially when I talked to you about those ultras that I did early days. And I stuck to that plan and that structure and that routine, and that kind of taught me what I need to do and how I need to do it. But I think getting back to your question, or you just saying, I've always wondered, how do you approach an ultra? At the end of the day, and this is a good tip I can give you, because I know one day you'll be an ultra marathon runner, it's just a number in your head.
Mm.
So you tell yourself, and a lot of people, it gets quite interesting for me when it comes to running, is you tell yourself to achieve this number. A lot of people achieve the 42 and then that's all they'll ever do.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll tick it off the box once. It's like a 29-year-old. It's like anything in the nine. So if you turn in 49, 59, like most people do it when they're nines.
I literally just heard this on something.
What was that on? Adam Alter with
Chris. Was it on Modern Wisdom?
Modern Wisdom might have been, but it was on Adam Alter talking to Dario.
And I've
listened to a lot of Adam Alter's and Reddy's books, and it's true, because you get to that age and you go, oh, fuck, like, what am I doing with my life? Which I was obviously a bit earlier than most people. And you just go, oh, I'm doing a marathon. Yeah, and then they tick it off the box, and then they're 30, and then they're like, oh, fucking, what am I doing with my life now? And they might get into something else. So I find it interesting that people stop at 42 when you really are probably just testing the waters with your mental fitness, not with your physical fitness. Yeah. And I think if I'm going to be here and talk today, I'm not your go-to guy for physical fitness. I love to have a drink, I love to have fun and whatever. I'm pretty loose like that. I like to live on the edges of either work hard or have fun. The balance of, like, it's funny, I've always been talking about like promoting a balanced lifestyle, but it's actually more like living on the edges of both, right? If I'm going to do this, I'm going to go all in with that. So at the moment, like I said, I'm not drinking because I just want to concentrate on a few other things and get that right. But back to your question, Brandon, I think I would say how I prepared for it is whatever the number is that I'm going to achieve, because it took a long time to obviously build up to running 100 kilometers. Years, I guess, but it's just a number in your head. So then it comes down to breaking that number down. I'm terrible at maths, but it's pretty simple, I guess, in a sense of, all right, I want to achieve 100, 2 weeks out of it, 3 weeks out of it, you've got to be up at that 80% ballpark because of like getting the kilometers in. So
so your week sort of look like at least hitting 80 kilometers for
the you know, it should be 100, but for me, I focused on this program I focused heavily on strength training for the first time in my life. I've never strength trained before. I had Andrew Timos come on my podcast, which is my osteo and strength and conditioning coach, and he set me a plan out in December of last year. And that really narrowed things down to not overdoing
too much
on your legs, which a lot of people that I've got to run with lately are doing. And I just see it as like a way to blow out your legs really early.
And, at the end of the day, you want to get to the event and make sure you're there on the day ready to go with fresh legs.
How was the strength training for you? You respond well?
Yeah, I did, and I've got a really bad lower back. So that was the main objective, was to help sort that pain out. So I started strength training, I think it was 4 times a week at the start. So like January, February. So it was a 6-month program. And ran once. And that once a week run was a HIIT workout, you know, fast-paced 5 kilometre or whatever. It's going to be quite interesting to look back on where I was at the start of the year versus the middle of the year. But, yeah, I was just doing that, whatever he said. You know, some weeks I'd miss running because I'd just be so heavily concentrated on the gym.
Yeah.
And then I've never been all in on the gym or all in. I'm like, I'm one or the other. So I'm not. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm either running or at the gym. I'm never doing both. So it was nice to finally do both.
Yeah.
I felt good, really good.
Yeah.
So you felt like when you were doing the both, that's when you were sort of peaking. Like
yeah, I got to a point, I reckon probably, so the race was in June, probably start of April, no, end of April, start of May. Yeah, I was feeling on top of the world. And just, yeah, it's slowly, it's called a periodized program. So it slowly changed over. So I was strength training heavily for 3 months.
Yeah.
And then I dropped the weight, just a touch, and dropped the reps to get more of your max, your 1 rep max.
Yeah.
And then increased the running kilometers on the legs. So I was only running, I think, 3 times a week, maybe not even, maybe twice.
Yeah.
And that was just consistent and I'll just stick to it. Whether it was, you know, a HIIT workout or, you know, a really fast paced 10 kilometer run, which I hate. I don't run fast. I'm an ultra marathon runner. Yeah, like, I'm all about running slow and keeping those BPMs really low at your 150s, your 140s. So yeah, I ran a couple of times a week, and then I'd have a long distance run on the weekends, usually Saturday, and then recover Sunday. But I always had 3 recovery days during the week, religiously. And I would stick to, you know, your hot and colds, your plunges, your ice baths, saunas, a lot of recovery, a lot of osteo work. That was pretty much it. That was my life.
You, it sounded like you're kind of doing basically everything you could to make sure you're there.
Yeah, I was, and it's good that I lived on my own, and I was also juggling like 2 co and a full time job. So it is, to look back on now, it's a lot, but I do have a really good support crew that helped me get there. And yeah, I was in really good condition right up until the day before the race.
Yeah. So what, you sciatic nerve? What you saying?
Was actually my SI joint. Yeah, I thought it was sciatic. Okay. Yeah, it was SI. But do you want me to talk about that?
How
did you transition to that being a mindset thing? Like, because I don't know, it sucks that you've put in all that effort to then get sort of injured right before your event. Some people could probably pull out, but you've decided to go on with it.
Well, yeah, so a couple of things. In November last year, I missed out on the Quickest Thieves 100 kilometer 4 days out from the race because I went into the osteo. Mine was away at the time, and I said that I was having issues with the area that's the SI joint. And he actually, I had bladder issues too. So he actually rushed me to the hospital. So he thought, and my videographer that was in the desert, he's an osteo as well, which was fucking lucky.
Yeah, that would've
and been. He said he's had to send one bloke, but he was way older than me to do the same thing. It's called quarter equina, which means you can't do number ones or twos without fucking assistance. So yeah, it's pretty serious, because it's about the nerve on the spine. So I went in, I had a partner at the time, she came with me, and I got an MRI and I had to pull out because I didn't know if I had this issue or not. And then it turned out I was fine. It's just my SI joint playing up. So the nerve pain, and I drove a lot at work, so driving a lot caused a lot of the issue. The nerve pain just got so bad, like I was struggling to walk. And fast forward to the desert, and I was like a week out and I could feel the niggle again. And I was just like, oh, surely not. And I was there a week prior to the race, which was nice to acclimatise. And I think it got to... Brody got there on the Wednesday. We raced on the Saturday. So the Friday, we had a whole heap of things to film. And I was struggling to walk. But I think I helped set up the race because we're obviously in a remote area. And I had a film, I had a videographer with me. So I wanted to do as much as I could for the community. I helped set up and realized I was out in the desert. Realized I was the only 100 kilometer volunteer. No one else. Sent us a group message out and said everyone needed to help out. And I was like, fuck. So I got up at 6:30, had a coffee, and that was it.
The day before.
Yeah. So yeah, it sounds terrible.
The whole day.
Terrible. Well, it gets worse. So I drove out to the desert. We didn't even have a car. So someone drove us out there, set up. It was 32 degrees by midday. And I'd already started to feel like I was getting heat stroke. Told the ladies that we had to, and this is heavy, heavy equipment we had to set up too. I told the ladies that we had to go back because I was not feeling good. They went, took us back. I drank a whole heap of water, ate, and then fell asleep for 3 hours because I was, felt like I was getting heat stroke. Like, I was fucked, yeah.
Doesn't sound like the most ideal preparation going into 100K.
It gets worse. Yeah, so then they had a colour run for the kids. And then they wanted everyone else to just come and support that. So I went again. And I by this stage, I was like, all right, this is not getting any better. This is getting a lot worse and fast. So I started to get, into my head a little bit. And Brody, we did that. I just walked it because they said, all participants have to run it. I'm like, are you kidding? Anyway, so I walked it, got some more photos. And then I just said, all right, Brody, like, we're on. And I think the number one thing with me is I can just flick a switch, and when I flick that switch, it's game on. Yeah, we're all in. So I just flicked the switch. I said, all right, enough of helping everyone else, which I'm very good at. And I ate well. He gave me a deep tissue massage, and then we just did everything we could and to work the little fucking niggle. And it did help, and I just took a whole heap of vitamins, a whole heap of turmeric, and tried my best to deal with it. Woke up in the morning carb loaded, all the rest of it, and I felt reasonably well, but I couldn't feel the niggle, and that was kind of irritating because I'm like, I wonder if this is going to come back worse. And it didn't come back. But what I did realize is that I'm always used to running these ultras early morning. So, I wake up and pretty much bang on. I'm there for the boys that were here that I run with. They know me. I'll get there 5 minutes before the event and go. I've done that before. But, I started at 5 p.m. So I had a whole day to
wait.
And, yeah. And
started my nerve, at 5 p.m.?
Yeah, because of the heat. Yeah, I can talk about that as well. So,
was that like a scheduled thing? Like
anywhere between 2 and 12 at night you can start. And you had to be at the last leg by 7 in the morning. And you'd have to have started the last leg between 7 and 9. If you don't, you're out.
Wow.
It was a lot to take in. Originally, I was going to start at 2 p.m. and then I got talked out of it the day before because they're like, are you kidding? Like, think about how hot it was today. And I was like, I thought everyone was starting at 2. Like, no way.
So everyone starts at different times.
Yeah, because there's 25 kilometers, 50, 75 and 100.
Right.
It allows everyone to start at different times, different fitness levels. So it gives everyone 24 hours. It doesn't matter what race they're doing. And it's brutal. So
that's even tougher, starting at different times.
Yeah.
Because you're 100% like sort of, you could be out there by yourself basically.
Well, that's, yeah. Oops. As you run more ultras, you kind of do realize it's pretty much you against everyone else. Or well, not even you against yourself, yeah, I should say. Yourself, yeah. And there's everyone,
how many others doing that shit?
Yeah, well, I learned that. I learned that, especially on this day. And then, got time to race. I did a really good warm up, felt really good. And then the bus was there to pick us up, and I realized I forgot my bibs. So I had to run back barefoot to my hotel, grab the bib, run back. I actually just remembered this the other day, and I was sweating and puffing and everyone was laughing at me. And I ran it barefoot and I sprinted. So it's probably stupid, but they were just going to leave. They weren't going to stay.
They weren't waiting.
Nah, so I ran back, had the bibs, and then I was sweating. I was like, oh, this is the worst prep ever. I kind of just took it in and accepted it.
Yeah, accept.
And then, started at 5 p.m. with two other blokes. They'd both been Ironmen. They'd had done 200-kilometre runs. They'd done 160s. One was from New Zealand. The other one was from England.
Mm.
And an Aussie walk into a bar. So, it was special. It was nice to be able to run with them. They were a bit older than myself, 40s and early 50s, I think. Mm. And just to see how they go about it versus how I go about it was different. But
different prep.
Yeah, much different.
Well, that's how you learn, though. At the end of the day, you got to get yourself there, show up and learn from others. Like, it's like same as me going up doing a marathon. There's so many things that you don't think about until you actually go there and do it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's and you also forget, even if you have done them before, until you're out there, which is something that I always remember when I'm out there. Oh, fuck, I forgot that.
Did you hallucinate or anything?
Yeah, I can get into the run. So we started at 5 p.m. Mm. It was still 30 degrees at that stage. So I'm glad I didn't start at 2 p.m.
Fuck.
And
so hot.
Yeah, it was cooking. Kicked off at 5 p.m. and the sun was up till 6, maybe just past 6.
Mm.
And then you're in the dark for 12 hours. So then it all
headlamp on.
Yeah, headlamp on. You have to have two on you. One of mine died, so they didn't know that because otherwise we'd have been disqualified. But you have to have a bike light on the back of you as well at all times. That kept turning off, so I was doing well early. And what actually happened that was pretty severe is that SI joint kicked up on and turned up a notch, and it was causing a lot of pain through my left cheek. And it was actually so severe that I was just contemplating quitting right then and there.
Mm.
And I was just like, how the fuck am I about to get through this? And for Tuco and raising money, we made this, it was called Quickest to the Cactus. And it was a time of, so everyone like put their times in of what time they thought I would get.
Because
I'd achieved a 100-kilometer race before. Nothing like this though. And everyone would kind of gauge off that one and put in a vote, and that kind of got my ego ticking a little bit.
Yeah, right.
And I remember I was probably like 12 Ks in, and I was just like, not even, probably like 5. And I just smiled and I was just like, fuck, that ego's gone now. Like, it's all just about getting shit done. This is 5 kilometers in.
That's so when the pain.
Oh, by the time I did 12 and a half Ks, I was just like, this is going to be brutal. The most brutal thing in my life. Like, I think when I get back, I'm just going to have to can it. So, it was a very long 12 and a half kilometres back to the base camp. So the map, for anyone listening, is like a four-leaf clover. So the centre point was always the centre.
Yeah.
So every loop, you go back to the centre.
Yeah.
And 12 and a half Ks out was like another base camp that you can get food and water.
Yeah.
People always ask me, did you stop? Well, that's when you like stop, you have a feed, fill up your bags, more nutrition, and you keep going. Mm. The first 12 and a half was brutal. The next 12 and a half back to base for the first 25 kilometers, I was in absolute agony. I got back and I forgot that I even had a videographer. And I just looked at him and I was just like, mate, this is not good. I'm not in any form to keep going. And he worked on me. He goes, is it that bad? I said, yeah. And he worked on me. He put Rappi gel. Do you know what that is?
No.
Australia's best kept secret. If you want to have...
I'm writing that one down.
Rappi gel.
If you want to keep running, that's what you use. Because it pretty much numbs. Yeah, it numbs you. So I used... That didn't work. And I was like, oh, shit, if that's not working, we're in all sorts here. So he actually said, Zach, you sure you don't have, like, Voltaren or Panadol in it? And they did tell us not to use it because of how dehydrated you get. But, yeah, I used that. Took as much as I could of that. And then I kicked on for the next 25 leg. And I remember walking out, it was like 9:30 p.m. So you think about that. I started at 5, 6...
4 hours.
That's over 4 hours for a 25 kilometer run. So you think about the terrain that I'm on.
Yeah.
So yeah,
elevation
brutal. So
sand as well.
Sand dunes, gibber, which is like the red rock, and you run on top of that, and there's just huge boulders everywhere. So like you literally had to look at the ground the whole time. Yeah, so I ran out, and I remember looking at these boys running, and I was just thinking, I'm going to tell them that I'm going to walk the rest of this because I'm out. Like, this is not going away. Nothing's worked. And I reckon at about 30 kilometres, and I was still running with them, and I did not want to be. Every time we stopped and walked up a sand dune or something, I was wrapped. Every sand dune I saw, I was the only person that was wrapped because that meant that I could get my hiking sticks out, put 18% off each hit off the pressure, and then you know just slowly walk up it. And it was the biggest relief ever. So I wasn't using much pressure on my feet at that point, which ultimately allowed me to finish the race, and I'll explain why later. But yeah, so at 30 k's the Voltaren kicked in, and I didn't feel the pain anymore, so I was like a new person. So my battle was the first 30, and it was just like, it was like a breath of fresh air. Like, it was like, I can't explain. It was like my personality's just changed again. And then when it changed, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm back. And the boys are losing it. They're like, geez, were you in that much pain? Like, I was hardly talking for 30 days. I remember getting to the next aid station saying, this is the fucking best aid station I've ever been to. And they're like, why? I'm like, oh, I bloody love it. And then I remember even getting back for the 50 to the hub again. And I thought, I reckon Brody would have thought like I was going to call it quits the way I was looking at 25. And I ran back and I'm like, 50 G's, baby, we did it. Like my whole mindset had just changed. And that's the beauty of ultra running. Like you don't know how you're going to go into it. Normally the back end's always the most brutal, and it was for sure. But not going to take that away from it. But the start for me this time was, you know, it was excruciating. And you know, that excess amount of pain wasn't needed, but I found a way to deal with it. Just eat four Voltaren every Valium would have been nice, but four Voltaren every 5 minutes, and you're right. But
I'll have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, honestly, it's a game changer. I'm not a big Voltaren person either, but they worked. So yeah, the 50k back, and then leaving the 50k, I think it was about 1 a.m.
Yeah,
and that's when it starts. I remember the boys, they'd ran through the night before, I hadn't, and they started saying like, yeah, it gets hard earlier in the mornings because you have those intrusive thoughts coming in, and yeah, it did get tricky probably around the 60 kilometer mark. You know, that's now looking at like 3 a.m. And the two fellas that I was with, one of them started having serious foot issues. He had a blister on the bottom of his foot, and he wasn't using hiking poles. And I kind of just said, I kept offering them to him. He said, no. And it got to a stage where we were on this sand dune, and this sand dune, it was pitch black, obviously, but it was just, I knew that it went for ages. I could see red lights like 5-6 kilometers in front of me. So that's when you know you're on this sand dune for a long time. And I said to him, like, do you want these? And he's like, nah. And then I heard him scream again in pain, and I pulled the sticks out and I was going to use them for me. And as I used them, I was like, nah, gave them to him. And I gave them to him, and then he was really struggling. And I didn't really want to leave them, but I was on a mission at this stage. I was more so on a mission of trying to work out where I was mentally. So I just realized every time I looked back, their lights were going, they were becoming more and more distant.
Yeah.
And that's when you start questioning everything, because, you know, there was no headphones, there was no... Like, I had headphones. And I only, for my friends and family that are listening, they know that I only run with headphones in. This was the first race that I got to 60Ks and I hadn't listened to headphones, and I hadn't even looked at my phone because there was no reception.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So there was no need for it. I'd hardly taken photos, and because of how much excruciating pain I was in, I was honestly so super focused on just getting through.
Yeah.
But I really didn't take many photos at all. And, yeah, got to 60Ks, and I was just questioning what I was fearful of. and allowing myself to feel my being in fear.
Yeah.
Which was interesting, because then I'd ask a question like, is it thinking that I'm going to get bitten by a snake that's stopping me from, you know, moving forward?
Yeah.
Even though I am at this stage moving forward.
Yeah.
But not at the rate that I wanted to be at that point. And I was trying to work out the excuses in my head. And then it was, are you fearful of being alone? Are you fearful of the dark? And it's all quite fair enough answer.
Yeah.
reasons. Being alone and being in the dark is something that I'm sure everyone's fearful of. So, and then you add the desert, and then it's a whole different ballgame.
No one's around. It's just you out there by yourself.
Yeah.
A bit of Wolf Creek
was thinking. Yeah, there's a lot to think about when you're out there. So, I was still really like skeptical of why I wasn't running and why I was walking, because my legs were in really good form. Like, they felt great. And then it was so wild. It's actually crazy to think about now. But I've told a few people this. So then I hadn't had an answer yet. I didn't really have an answer. And then this voice in the back of my head said, refuse to give up. And it was Zane's voice. And then I had a shiver up my spine. And then I just ran. And I ran for like 3 hours straight. And I think my time to get back to the Hubbards for the last leg for the third stop. Was 8:30 and I got back at 7 on the dot.
Fuck, so you blew it
fully,
out the gate.
Fully turned it on.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I really did. And then got back, reassessed and just said, oh, I'm just going to get this last leg done. And it was, the sun was coming up, so that was pretty cool. Had flies all over me. There was a lot of people there. And then I got to actually walk with a friend that I met that was there a week early, and walked with him. He started his first ever 100. He started at 2. He's a big boy. And he was there setting up for his last leg, and I met him there.
That's awesome.
He's like, I was waiting for you. And so, yeah, I got to walk out with him for the last leg. And then I actually finished it with a 17-year-old girl who actually ran 75 kilometers. So, yeah, me and Mim, shout out to Mim if she listens to this. So, yeah, we finished together the last 12 and a half. And what we did to get through the last, which was, once again, started getting really hot.
Mm.
We finished at 12 o'clock. So, you know, from 9 a.m. to 12, it starts getting really hot really quickly. So, got it back up to 30. And I only got down to 20 degrees during the night, when it was meant to get down to like 6. Like, you have to have thermals on you at all times.
Yeah.
What we did, me and Mim, was we'd see 3 flags, and she said, why don't we run one and then walk one? Because by that stage, you're gone. There's nothing left in you. There's actually nothing left. It's literally just a mental game.
Yeah.
So we did that, and you know, we kept passing people, and then I said, all right, why don't we run 2 and then walk 2? So then we ran 2 and walked 2. And we ran 3, and then we walked for ages. And then, you know, by that stage, I had a really bad, I've never had, I have bad guts in general, but I had really bad heartburn and reflux from all the,
nutrition, carbs.
Yeah, all the gels, which is what I've learned with these fellas, that, you know, they're strict on their diets, where I'm a bit more loose-ended, yeah. And, I just put in my body whatever I feel like. Well, at the end of the day, it got the job done.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just don't want that reflux again, because that was a big issue, and I was struggling to put things down by the end of it, especially when you need it.
Yeah.
Finished the race with Mim at about 12 o'clock, and I think I'd completed it in 18 hours.
That's incredible. Being out there in that heat.
No sleep.
For that long.
No sleep.
18 hours straight through.
Hours. Yeah.
It's something else being able to do stuff like that. Super inspiring, mate.
Thank you.
And well done for getting that done.
Appreciate it. And I'm sure it's
probably just maybe started to get you thinking about what's coming next, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, once you start achieving big things, I know your mind starts to switch and think about, what else can I do?
Yeah.
And, I think I was listening to or seeing something on your podcast, and you made an announcement about something coming up. Can you tell us a little bit about that as well?
I put it on a friend, Shannon, to become an ultra marathon runner. It has to get, there's going to be a lot to get approved if that happens. But he's a very well-known DJ within Melbourne, and he DJs a lot at Revolver Upstairs and Tramp. And I said, well, why don't what happened was is we ran, he closed Tramp the other day, and I'm actually running, shout out to Hope Run, which is a fundraiser for Gotcha for Life, which is to prevent suicide within Australia and raise awareness for mental health and help those with mental fitness. But I ran with him after he closed Tramp, so I woke up at 4:30. Everyone must have thought that I went on a bender.
Oh, that's what I felt you did.
I'm not that super.
Carl's telling me this is definitely coming on the podcast.
Not that superhuman, bro. But what I did was, got up early, met him there for his gig at 6, and watched him play for 2 hours, and then we went for a run around Albert Park, and I thought he was only going to run 10 kilometres, but he ran a half marathon, so I didn't
say... Was he up all night?
Say no. No, it's his job. It's his job. So, he woke up, and we smashed that, and then I got me thinking that day. I said to him on the podcast, I said, why don't we reverse it and run to revs? I think it's like actually a really incredible idea, and we do know the bloke that runs it on a Sunday, so hopefully all goes well in the next 6 months, a year, I can tick that off the bucket list. But I said to him to run an ultra, and I'll run 200Ks across 2 days to revs, and then play a set after it.
Play a set.
Is that something you like sort of plan to do with other people as well, or like just you two?
No, of course, other people. Yeah, there'll be a lot of... And Mike Toner, who runs Revs on a Sunday, is a really big influence on running.
Yeah.
That's how me and Shannon met. We're through Quick as Thieves, which is his running foundation, where he gets, hundreds of people to run in St Kilda to raise funds for Fred Hallows. So I've done that for a couple of years now, and I came up with that idea just... hopefully to raise money and funds for Tuco and Gotcha for Life. So,
And how much did you actually raise for the ultra?
For the desert?
Yeah.
It's still to be tallied up, but I can tell you guys what we raised for my cause, which was $7,200, which is pretty incredible. And then we've also gotten merch from sponsors that chipped in for merchandise to allow us to, raise even more. So once the merchandise sells, then we can get a full amount. Like
for our listeners, they look absolutely unreal as well. Yeah,
quality hoodies.
But
once we get that total amount, then we can work it out, which will be great.
And then, like, just for the audience as well, how can they donate if they would like to?
Yeah.
Tuco.
So if you follow Tuco on Instagram at T2KO__, you can click on the link in our bio, and that will give you our website, which you can donate straight to Tuco itself. And if you would like to own some merchandise, just send us a DM.
Yep, beautiful. And your potty?
Oh, yeah.
How long have you been doing that for?
Talking Mark with Zach.
That song's elite.
Shout out to the boys. I've been doing it since March last year.
Yeah. Was Harish your first?
I think he was about episode 6, I think.
Yeah, 4 or 6.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I love that bloke. Actually, I haven't heard from him much lately, and he hasn't heard from me much.
We probably haven't heard from him too much either. I think he's quite loved up.
I think he's got a girlfriend, and I just...
Yeah, that's right.
He fell in love, I fell out of love.
In the potty, you were like, oh... How have a missus, and then think straight after that.
He was keeping it hush, wasn't he?
No, good on him. He's doing well for himself, and
it goes both ways, and I'm a big part to blame for that. But I'll reach out to him. I think we actually have I'll put a plug in 2 weeks. We're doing a bit of a merch sale drop for Sarcoma Awareness Month, so it's July now.
Yep.
So it'll be the 30th of June if you boys want to come down.
Yeah.
On a Sunday, we're going to drop some merch, play some tunes, and probably have a coffee stall or something.
Yeah.
I'm yet to know where we're going to put a location, but we're working it out at the moment, the team behind Tuco. So, that'll be a good day. And it's yeah, it's always fun to get together and sell a bunch of merch and do some good things for people.
And just in regards to Harish and those other people as well, what does it mean to you when you see like Harish get through the whole process of going through osteosarcoma?
Wow, it's incredible. It's a battle that's taken me by surprise.
And I'd just like to mention, like, hands down to yourself for raising, like, incredible amount of money, awareness for sarcoma as well. Like, all that money that you've raised is definitely, I guess, going into, like, research and being able to, I guess, doctors understand more about the cancer as well, to do things like very fortunate that Harish is doing well and, yeah, all those funds, I guess, go a long way and, yeah
achieving definitely. A lot. I appreciate it. I think at the moment our main objective right now is to help those directly in need. So it's not so much we help with research. Actually, I'll take that back. We've given a lot of money to ANZ SA, which is Australia's biggest non-for-profit charity for sarcoma.
Yeah.
So they do the bulk of the research, if not all of it. So we did donate $11,500 when Tuco started. I donated that directly from those first lump of sum fundraisers, and then now we've helped with people like Harish, Tess, Ethan, and Sierra, who lives in America, just directly. So we just deal with them directly and just ask what they, you know, might need funds for, what they need help for. And it's very much so a community-based non-for-profit where, you know, we get together with families, friends, and, you know, I've got to know Harish's family quite well in the last couple of years, as well as everyone else's that we've been supporting. But at the moment, we're just going through a lot of different, you know, structures with the business and allowing ourselves to grow before we tackle any more
events.
Events, or more so just like helping others. It's just, we're so small at the moment. Yeah. It's very hard to, you know, help one-on-one with someone else. It gets very full-on very quickly, which is I'm all for, but I would rather be working in Tuco full-time before we tackle more people and help others in need.
Yeah. Are you hoping to go full time?
Tuco? Definitely. Yeah. I wasn't the goal. It wasn't even a thought when I started Tuco. But just sitting down with our accountants now and just understanding how important it is to be all in and you know, get the best out of not only myself but Tuco. We need someone full time, just working it all out. You know, I've got a lot to learn, not just in the medical industry, but you know, business industry and accounting and all the rest of it. So, yeah, it's gonna be a crazy ride. But I feel like I'm brave enough to tackle it and see what comes from it.
Yeah, like definitely, and like seeing everything that you've already been through, like 100%, I think you'll be able to do it.
Yeah, 100%. Thank you. Yeah, but back to your question, Kyle. Yeah, it is something that I will hopefully sooner rather than later work full time for.
Yeah.
While to even be able to say that and think about that. But it's just gotten to that point now where it is a lot to be doing when I'm working full time. Because, you know, a lot of things get missed or, you know, miscommunication, or there's just so many different grey areas.
Yeah.
That it becomes difficult to run a business when you're actually trying to run someone else's business. Yeah,
100%. So what, would you try and go part-time Sparky or see how that transitions?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it'd be a subcontractor as a Sparky for a couple of days a week and then put the Tuco cap on for the other couple of days. So it's pretty exciting because, you know, I get to structure my days out how I want it.
Yeah.
So it's crazy to think about, but I'm looking forward to it, and I feel like a lot of consistency and motivation will help me get there.
Zachy.
Oh, here we go.
We've got a closing questions.
Yeah.
And it's deeper questions too. Yeah, like we've said, we like to have the deeper conversations. And obviously, like yourself, you've already recognized, like, deep within yourself, you're conscious of things that are playing in your mind. You've spoke to psychologists, dissected what's right and reasons why you've done particular things. Mm-hmm. So, got three cards in front of you. It's your choice to pick one.
These are Kyle's questions.
You hand it to me and I'll
Yes, Ben, it's throwing it straight on it.
Pick wisely.
Am I only getting one option or am I going to slowly get all three?
Nah, just the one.
Okay. I'll just pick one.
Yep.
Just pick one. I feel like two would be the one, wouldn't it? In the middle.
Let's see.
Give it to me.
Why do you exist?
Why do I exist? Why do I exist?
Yeah.
Well, because my parents had sex.
Nah, but like your purpose as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
What gets you up?
Why do I exist? Like,
greater purpose.
Yeah, okay. My greater purpose, well, I guess we've just spoken about my purpose for the last however long. Hour. Yeah. I think my purpose is to inspire and motivate others to do better within themselves, whatever that might be, even if it's just getting out of bed in the morning. I think my ultimate purpose, what I probably have been thinking about most lately, is to combat and cure cancer.
Yeah. Massive.
Which you're definitely working towards well, and as you've just spoken about, you're hopefully going full time and therefore you're able to commit even more to it. And hopefully at the end of the day, one day, you can optimally cure cancer. And
yeah, that'd be incredible.
Is there anything else that you'd like to chat about?
All right. So on my podcast, we have this segment called What Is Your Wackest Story?
I actually heard this. We're on your last day.
So I don't know if he's have any last minute, because I haven't actually prepped you for this.
No.
Have you got any on each other?
Wack stories.
Done any footy trips or anything?
I am a soon to be high school teacher, so I can't have too many whacks.
Mate, my mum's a high school teacher. She's coming on in a couple
of weeks. Nothing too whack, but let's have a bit of a think.
Whack story.
Kyle, you'd have some whack stories. I reckon one whack story between Kyle and I when we're young fellas. Kyle's chased me.
I'll tell you what, that question, why do you even exist? Jesus Christ. If I was on psychedelics, I reckon you
would have went pretty deep.
Oh, I reckon I wouldn't have come out of that trip the same. All these cameras on me, I would have been fucked. That would have been it.
I think the other two would be better.
so I went number two. Well, can I read the others?
Yeah, we might as well have a look at these other questions.
Oh, I'll read them out to myself and then I'll answer them. What is the greatest gift another human has given you? Greatest gift. Well, there's a lot to think about, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Wait. It's because you never really have these questions.
Oh, I've got this one. This one, because I was thinking. Like gift as in physical or gift as in
anything.
Yeah, so I think the greatest gift another human has given me is the gift of refusing to give up. I think like that's probably the most amazing thing that has pushed me to you know, dive into how I'm feeling or how I'm coping. On a dark scale, and then refusing to give up, and then also helping others when it comes to osteosarcoma, you know, just to refuse to give up, like, you know, on a mental scale, physical scale, whatever it may be. And Zane gave me that, and I think it's like the most beautiful thing, and I can't believe a man at 19 years of age thought of that himself. And then has allowed it to ripple effect into a community where everyone's saying it now. You know, a friend of mine, she called me like 2 weeks ago, maybe three, and she's like, it clicked for me. And it only just clicked for me this year. And I'll be completely honest, that was rock bottom. So it can click for everyone differently. You know, I run ultra marathons. Obviously, I refuse to give up in that sense as well. Mm. And there's always a different way that ultimately allows me to refuse to give up. There's always a different door, and I open that door and in my mind, and that'll get me to the other side.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a wild, wild thing. And if I can give you something, give you a gift on my way out, it would be that refuse to give up mentality for sure. It
definitely goes a long way. Mm. And like, even with the ultra, when you were fucking 5 or 10 kilometers in, you're in this absolute agony.
Yeah. Like,
your choice to, you could have fucking drew the line right there. But, you know, at the end of the, you know, tunnel, you see the light, and, you know, you said you got to the 30 kilometers and you were on.
I was whizzing, yeah. I was on. Yeah. But yeah, it is, you know, you can give, and that's the other thing. It's fine to give up. Yeah. And it also is okay to give up. But just knowing when that mentality should kick in and actually using it is it's a tremendous power. It's a superpower, really.
100%.
Yeah.
Oh, you've answered that perfectly, I think. Couldn't have said it any better.
Yeah.
No, great gift that you have there. And yeah, we're super grateful that you've been able to come onto our podcast. We've definitely learnt a lot from you today and got some great insights from where you've come from and what you do with yourself and what your, I guess, goals are with your charity, which are, yeah, super inspiring. And yeah, cannot wait to see like what else comes for you. I reckon, really, mate, you deserve all the good things that will come to you.
Thanks so much, mate. I appreciate it. I think I know what's to come. And we've actually got this thing called Tuco Athletes starting up. So if you ever want to run an ultra marathon, Brandon.
Mate, I would love to.
Might set you up.
Kyle would too, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Kyle.
Join in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Set yous up, and I reckon both of yous jump on the ultra train.
We'll shake with that one right here, right now. So we're jumping on board.
Welcome, 2K athletes.
2K. That's 2K great. Athletes, I love it.
The first of many.
Oh,
any whack stories?
Where are these?
I honestly think
of them tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, one is that I cut Kyle's finger off when we were young fellas.
Oh, yeah? How bad?
Kyle, I think I did something to my old... So we've got an older brother as well. And I think I bashed my older brother, and Kyle's come to try save him. And I've ran off scared of Kyle or something. He's chasing me down a hallway. We're on holidays, I think. And slammed the door on him, and he's... lost his little pinky finger.
Pinky got in the door and just blood pissing everywhere.
How much came off?
Oh, so it was the top of the pinky.
Completely off?
Yeah, it was like hanging by the skin. It was a bit of a nightmare.
That was just one that's come to my mind with you. But yeah,
and then I was going to the hospital and I was spewing up everywhere.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Nah.
I don't mind that.
It's all right.
What about you? What about give me the wrong directions today?
Yeah.
That's a bit of a whack story, but isn't it?
I do it so much too. I get the 4 and 2 mixed up.
It's all right. I'm dyslexic as well.
You won't do that again. But
I probably will.
Nah, yeah. It's lame. Well, I actually do it a lot too.
Yeah.
Have you got a story?
A whack story.
Yeah.
Fuck, I was
actually... Well, you would have heard funny over your potties. Yeah. That's the best one.
I got a really good one just recently, last Friday. It hasn't been uploaded yet, but a bloke, he went into the People's Choice Awards, and he was meant to be a seat filler. Dude, I didn't even know this was a thing.
Seat filler.
Yeah, so like when other people go to have drinks and whatever, they don't want the crowd to look empty, so they've got these seat fillers. So he got a ticket. He just married his wife in New York, and it was just them two, and he got a ticket to go to LA and go to this thing, so they did. And it was just one ticket, and he was very, you could say... he was always staying between the lines. He'd never go out of the line kind of person. And, yeah, he went to this seat filler, and he reckons they made him feel like he was like, you know, like they just kind of like were very rude to him at the start and very like, yep, you're this kind of type of person. This is what you are. Make sure you know it. Like, you're in and out. If
this is your role.
Yeah, you're out. If we tell you, yep, the security go, you're up and you're out. So he went. He sat down. He was all nervous. He was like, well, this any 5 seconds I'm going to be in, that's it. That's my time. And the bloke next to him that he went out there with looked at him and said, let's rip these wristbands off and fucking run in the back there. And he goes, what? And then he's like, let's do it now. And he made the decision to rip those wristbands off and run out the back. And the people that he became like royalty in like space of 10 seconds. He went from, you know, getting treated like a bum to being treated like an actor or royalty. He had his makeup done. He was drinking. Oh, shit. He was drinking different cocktails. He talked to Adam Sandler. He talked to Jennifer Aniston.
Oh shit!
True story. And talked to like a whole heap of people, and he got like blind drunk. And then that was the first time he ever had done something outside those lines in his life. At like, you know, I think he was 28 or something. My age, 27 maybe. And had the best night of his life. And then
it pays off to be a bit spontaneous sometimes and take the opportunity when it comes.
That was definitely probably wackest story. So you'll have to tune into that episode. Yeah, comes out on Monday. I've got heaps of them. That's why I was talking back with Zach. But I can definitely tell you one. But I don't know. I've got a lot.
And your weekly potties?
No, I try to be. I'm not. Yeah. And it's like, I'll do one and then I won't upload it for like a month.
Yeah.
That's just how, I'm just a busy man. But I think I've definitely gotten to a better routine now for sure.
Yeah, that's good. Because it's a good thing with us, like Brando might be elsewhere. So you I just do a quick little solo by myself.
Yeah, it's good though.
Yeah.
Your content's good. Yeah. It's very good content, especially like your running content as well. You just do a really good job. Mm.
Yeah, it's slowly chipping away at it.
And like yourself,
produce shit videos and slowly
you're only gonna get better at it.
You know, we're all just trying to get by.
It's just kind of something that you got to work on the side until eventually, like yourself, like you can do it full-time hopefully.
Exactly right. It's just a side hustle, but it's actually a very enjoyable one, and you learn so much from other people.
100%. Gives you different perspectives.
And then just meeting great people like yourself.
Same to you boys. Same to you boys. What are we having for dinner?
You have to.
What are we having for dinner, man? Subs? Maple subs?
Pretty much. Have you had dinner?
Nah. We'll go.
Do you want to go get something?
Yeah.
Let's go do it.
I'm hungry.
That is.
We might wrap it up there. And thanks for coming on to the show, mate. Really greatly appreciate it. And I'm sure our guests will get a lot from that too.
No, I appreciate it.
And we are officially now two co-athletes.
Yeah.
And you're a tight mate of ours.
Hey, thanks, mate. Thanks for having it. I'm a tight mate.
Tight mates.
We'll take it.